This is the Marketplace Morning Report. I'm David Brancaccio.
A year ago tomorrow, the big story broke detailing decades of allegations of sexual harassment and predatory behavior against the powerful Hollywood producer Harvey Weinstein. That spawned the Me Too movement. We check in from time to time with Jillian Thomas, senior staff attorney at the ACLU's Women's Rights Project. Among other things, she's been on the lookout for new laws to protect people from predator bosses.
Legislation really has not resulted from the Me Too moment. There was a lot of legislation introduced in the last...
Yeah, you were counting them up.
Yeah. In over 30 states, roughly 125 pieces of legislation introduced around the country. I know, sounds promising, but most of that legislation actually had to do with regulation of the legislature's own sexual harassment policies and their responses to those allegations. And most of the measures that were enacted had to do with that as well, but very few were enacted.
So the few that were enacted were about legislators doing bad things and preventing them from doing bad things.
And a few other things. I don't mean to be so pessimistic. In California, naturally, there
because of Hollywood.
And just because California is its own
thing.
Sovereign nation. In California, there was a measure that that passed that requires employers to do mandatory training and put in place better complaint procedures. Another couple of states that might surprise you, Louisiana and Virginia, also passed similar legislation. And then in Vermont, there was some legislation actually passed addressing the issue of non-disclosure agreements. The issue of non-disclosure agreements really came to the forefront through the Weinstein scandal, and there are actually two different kinds. One is the sort that employees sign when they start a job, saying that you won't say negative things about the company, even to your coworkers, let alone to outsiders. And then there are also the kind of non-disparagement, non-disclosure agreements that are inserted in settlement agreements once allegations have been raised. The former, the pre-employment agreements, have been a definite target, and Vermont outlawed those. On the issue of non-disclosure agreements inserted as part of settlements, there's not as much consensus about whether it's the best thing to outlaw those, because if they are outlawed, some advocates think that it actually will incentivize employers to push back harder on settling and force victims into a sue or go silent conundrum.
Another avenue where the law has touched the aftermath of the Me Too movement are shareholder lawsuits, suing companies, saying you didn't do enough and we ended up holding the bag.
That's really extraordinary. It's some of the biggest names in some of the biggest scandals that have come to light. So it started with Fox. Then there was a shareholder lawsuit that was resolved for over $90 million a year ago and led to a lot of different programmatic changes. And then that's been followed by the Wynn Group, Steve Wynn, allegations of harassment brought against
casino
him.
Casino resorts, Las Vegas. Yeah.
That's right, over a number of years. And then CBS in the wake of the Moonves scandal, as well as just this month, Nike has been sued by a group of shareholders.
Now, as we know, we continue to report this stuff. Plenty of companies still haven't gotten the memo on this. But are there some companies that are figuring out how to, in your view, properly respond to a terrible cultural problem like this?
I really think there are. My friends in the management bar who represent employers as part of their practice tell me that their phones are ringing off the hook, whether it's because of fear of lawsuits or negative publicity or really just because they do want to do the right thing.
Companies calling say, what are we supposed to do? We have these allegations, or we want to be sure this doesn't happen here.
Yeah, it's the latter. It's getting in front of the allegations. It's figuring out, okay, we have a harassment policy and complaint procedure on paper, but how do we really make it work? No one's using it. And of course, statistics show people don't use those policies because they fear retaliation. And those studies also show that retaliation usually does result from bringing a complaint. So there are many employers who are saying, how can we get this right? How can we do better?
Well, what's the answer?
Oh, how long have you got? What it really takes is top-down commitment. The EEOC, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, came out with a task force report a couple of years ago with a number of different risk factors that indicate that an employer might be more of a susceptibility to harassment occurring in its ranks, and then also itemized best practices. And it's, as I said, top-down response, the message coming from the top that this matters, that there will be accountability. And, you know, training. Training gets a very bad name for a very simple and good reason, which is most training is terrible. Mm. And also, it doesn't happen enough. Such bad food and such small portions, right?
Anti-harassment harassment training, anti-discrimination training.
That's right. I mean, we come into our workplaces full of baggage from the culture, from our upbringing, from our families, our relationships. And it's just ridiculous to assume that a half an hour video training once a year is going to do anything to change anything. And so the best training is recognized as being interactive, as including hypothetical scenarios that draw the participant in, that happens frequently, and that happens as part of a larger regime of mutual respect, culture creation, that it shouldn't just be about avoiding liability. It should be about creating a place that everybody feels safe.
For proactive companies, what about the companies that are actually dealing with a problem that has come to their attention in their ranks?
Dealing with a problem requires, I think, in the experience of experts and certainly in the experience that I've observed, involves getting an outside third party to do a thorough investigation. You can't have people who are investigating the boss also be responsible to the boss. Another thing that's really important is enlisting all managers in identifying and then remedying harassment. You know, the things that we're reading about in the press really are the outliers, the top of the corporate hierarchy. Most harassment is happening by either coworkers or middle managers. And so making everybody accountable and having investigations that really let people know that they're going to be safe from retaliation and encourage them to speak out. And the final thing I'd say is there's a lot of talk about overcorrection, about firing people for offenses that shouldn't be fireable. I really do find that people who are expert in this field, who study it for a living, understand that there's a range of behavior and that firing, yes, sometimes is the only appropriate remedy. But you speak to most people who are the targets of harassment and they just want it to stop. They don't want anyone to get fired. Again, there are those occasions when firing is appropriate, but there are lots of different kinds of remedies between doing nothing and firing.
Jillian Thomas is a senior staff attorney with the ACLU's Women's Rights Project and author of a book about the law and sex discrimination. Jillian, always good to talk to you.
Thanks for having me.